The Runaway Asteroid, Chapter 18, Collision Course. Richard had already given orders that ships from Starlight Enterprise be assigned the immediate task of pursuing and capturing the 18 pirate ships that had destroyed the decoy freighters the day before. The SE freighters that had actually carried the probes into space had been joined by other ships gathered quietly from various sources during the previous week. They had converged during the journey so that many were in place throughout the area of the search, ready to respond to any orders that might come. Inside many of them were the Fire Wasp fighters SE produced for use in the asteroid belt. The Fire Wasps were small, tremendously fast, and amazingly maneuverable one-man fighters. Commander John Lewis was to issue similar orders to Space Command ships in the vicinity of the microwave net. There were enough SE ships close to the course the pirate fleet was taking that Fire Wasps could be launched to intercept the pirate ships within an hour. John Rakatary and Richard Starlight remained alone in Richard's office. "What do you make of it, Rock?" asked Richard. "Why did Zimbardo tell the entire planet that he was going to pulverize it and then set his projectile on a flyby course?" "I don't think he merely made a mistake," said Rock. "Consider this. Where did the communications from Zimbardo come from? An asteroid base. The Starman told us about this hollow asteroid and that it could be flown like a giant spaceship. We have seen only one large asteroid coming toward Earth. To be blunt, I think Lurton Zimbardo is a liar. The asteroid he aimed at Earth is his own base. His threat to slam it into Earth was intended to cause panic, and it did. He achieved that without actually having to carry out his threat. I think the real threat is what is inside this hollow asteroid." Richard was listening intently. The relief he had previously felt was evaporating rapidly. Rock continued. "We already concluded that the ability to sheath spacecraft and even asteroids comes from an alien intelligence more advanced than our own race. I think it highly likely that the source, at least the immediate source of that knowledge, is the asteroid Zimbardo has taken over. We don't know what other capabilities this asteroid base has, but we do know that Lurton Zimbardo is bringing it to Earth, very, very close to Earth, and that he will be here in 15 days. Robert Nolan and Beowulf Den made the 26-minute journey from the moon back to the space station. Robert had been full of chatter on the way back, but Den had responded only with short sentences, and after they had docked, they went their separate ways. Wolf found his way to his own private sanctum, saying he wanted to take a nap. He set a Do Not Disturb code on his communication system. Then he prepared another audio disc, making a brief report of the luncheon meeting at Starlight Enterprise. After the message had been sent, he destroyed the disc and removed all signs on his computer that the action had occurred. He stared out the window at the third planet, a beautiful blue and white globe, thinking nothing in particular. After a moment, he stretched out and tried to take a nap, but he couldn't sleep. A red light pulsed rapidly on the console near Lurton Zimbardo's chair. Seeing the flash from the corner of his eye, he jerked his head around and stared at it as if he couldn't believe that it was lit. "What's this?" he thought. "There's no message due now." He pressed the button that deactivated the light, placed headphones on, dialed a few knobs on the console, and pressed play. 15 seconds later, he leaped up from his chair and bellowed. With both hands, he jerked the headphone cord out of the control panel. The wires whipped through the air with a noise like a scourge. Zimbardo whirled, his eyes bulging, and flung the headphones from him with all his force. The set flew through the command center and collided with the opposite wall. Everyone in the room froze and turned to look at the pirate leader and were appalled at what they saw. He was trembling with demonic fury. No one moved or said a word. Even Jean was afraid to speak. They found us, Zimbardo shouted. They found us. The Earthmen know where we are. They've located the fleet. The freighters those fools destroyed yesterday were decoys. The Earthmen deployed the real probes, and they've already found us. They've outsmarted us. He cursed vehemently, then growled as if his teeth were grinding on gravel. But I'll never be outsmarted. I won't be outsmarted now. Zimbardo leaped back in his chair. Gene! Gene! He screamed like a man possessed. Right here, sir, said the young man, coming up quickly to the pirate leader's side. Crank up all the power this asteroid can give me. I'm going to create the biggest electromagnetic pulse this solar system has ever seen, and burn every last one of those probes out of the void. And when we are invisible again, we'll move this asteroid to a new course and continue our plan.
But, sir, pleaded Jean almost desperately, that would take a lot of power. It would be highly inefficient and might work against us. I don't know the power capacity of the asteroid. It could very well burn us out.
Zimbardo stopped moving for a moment and turned his head very slowly around and stared at Jean. His eyes glinted with an unearthly light. Do it, he hissed. Jean stepped back a pace, then pivoted swiftly and ran to the power breakers on the far side of the room. He began to pull switches, override safety indicators, and turn power dials to maximum output. In a little less than 3 minutes, he turned and looked back at Zimbardo. The pirate leader had not taken his eyes off his assistant for a second. With his mouth slightly open, Jean looked into Zimbardo's eyes from across the room and nodded with a quick jerk of his head. Zimbardo smiled, inclined his head slowly, and turned back to his console. He laughed out loud and pressed the switch that activated a general direction electromagnetic pulse. There was a deafening sound like that of a huge metal block falling to the floor and then grinding along an uneven surface. A wailing screech filled the room, and everyone but Zimbardo covered his ears. The screech increased in intensity until men fell to the floor and writhed, pressing their hands firmly to the sides of their heads. Then there was sudden silence, and the lights went out. Men began to moan, and someone's voice quavered. The atmosphere recycler has stopped. Everything has stopped, said Jean from the darkness. 12 fire wasps came upon the 18 pirate ships with a suddenness that took the pirates completely by surprise. The small spacecraft moved so quickly that the pirates could get off only wild shots that never came close to any of the SE craft. The fire wasps used narrow but highly dense laser weapon light with remarkable effectiveness. Skilled pilots and marksmen quickly disabled the pirate ships by piercing their power supply, effectively casting them adrift in space. The pirate sheathing system went down, rendering the ships visible. The battle was over in less than 2 minutes. Richard and Commander Lewis made the next order jointly. With a few exceptions, all Starlight Enterprise and Space Command spacecraft were to journey to the pirate's asteroid at once and prepare for battle. They would bring the attack directly to Lurton Zimbardo. After issuing the order, Richard reset his communication system to contact the Star Ranger. Now that the need for secrecy was past, he wanted to bring the returning starmen up to date and urge them to come to the pirate's asteroid with the others. Inside the Star Ranger, Mark cried out, "Hey, listen to this!" He directed the communication system to public announcement mode and restarted the message from Richard Starlight. In exultant tones, Richard related the events of the previous 2 days, concluding with the capture of the 18 pirate ships and the coming attack on Zimbardo's asteroid. The starmen cheered. They all jumped up and danced. After a moment, Zip asked, "How soon can we get to the asteroid, Mark?" Mark sat down and quickly figured. "We're only about a day and a half away." "What are we waiting for?" exclaimed Joe.
"Let's go," said Zip. "We could use a little diversion on our way back to Earth."
Mark set a new course, and Joe initiated it.
The Star Ranger turned slightly to intercept the asteroid where they had been imprisoned nearly 3 weeks before. As the power system aboard that same asteroid screeched into disruption and then silence, a massive electromagnetic shockwave was dispensed from its surface. A great pulse of destruction moved through space at the speed of light. Although it was not strong enough to harm spacecraft, the microwave probes were no match for its power. As the pulse swept past the probes, they winked out in flashes of golden light. On the master screen aboard the Tempest and in Richard Starlight's office, viewers watched the golden net disappear. Although it was past midnight, Richard and John Rakatori were wide awake with their eyes glued to the screen. From the center where the asteroid was indicated, an expanding circle of darkness went forth, gradually swallowing up all the probes. It was obvious to Richard that the microwave net was doomed. "Computer," he said in a dull voice. "How much longer until the net disappears?"
4 minutes, 12 seconds, came the mellow voice.
"The 18 ships are adrift," Richard said. "We can't lose them. But if this asteroid is maneuverable, as we know it must be, Zimbardo can speed up, slow down, or change course and avoid our attack. He can disappear." Richard's body tensed and he raised his voice. "How did he know about the probes?" he exclaimed with exasperation. "The spy," responded John Rakatori. Aboard the pirate's asteroid, power was returning. An emergency backup system had kicked in, causing the lights to flicker back on and the atmosphere recycler to hum quietly back into efficiency. With covert glances back at Zimbardo, the men returned to their stations. Zimbardo barked out a command. "Status report."
"Right away, sir," said Jean, taking his own seat. He attended to various dials and incoming signals.
"Sir," spoke up Jean. His voice trembled. He spoke as one apologizing.
"Mr. Zimbardo, Mr. Lather sent in a frantic message that all 18 ships were under attack. The transmission was cut off in mid-sentence. I scanned their location, sir, and detected 3 large Space Command ships approaching our convoy. They are about to be captured, sir."
Zimbardo turned slowly and looked at Jean without a change in expression.
"And," he said, "there's more, I can tell, and?"
"And there is a large fleet of ships belonging to Space Command and Starlight Enterprise converging quickly on our location. Even if we are sheathed, sir, with that many ships so close, they'll be able to find us before long." Lurton Zimbardo turned his eyes obliquely to the floor and joined his hands behind his back. He rocked for a moment on his feet, almost as if pondering a challenging philosophical question.
"I see," he said at last. He walked quietly over to his console, sat for a moment without moving, then began to move dials and enter numbers into the navigational program. Minutes passed. Zimbardo grew increasingly agitated as he worked. His men had stopped their own work and watched him. Where his hands had begun to move gently and carefully, they began to exhibit higher and higher degrees of animation. Soon he was pressing his keyboard vehemently and muttering under his breath. Once in a while he chortled. Finally he shouted, "Ha! That will do it. I won't be outsmarted." He pressed the enter button and then roared, "Yes, I win." He leaped from his chair and lifted up both arms. "I win!" he screamed. As the program Zimbardo had activated was engaged, the power it required began draining the emergency resources of the asteroid. The lights dimmed and the usual hum of the atmosphere recycler began to stutter.
"What did you do?" Jean asked with trepidation. "Even the backup power system is being strained."
"Just keeping a promise," said Zimbardo jovially. "I told Earth I'd sent them an asteroid. I wasn't very truthful at the time, I'm afraid. But now I've kept my promise. I've redirected the asteroid so that it will collide with a planet, and I've pushed the acceleration up to full."
A soul-wrenching moan escaped from Jean's lips. He stumbled over to his chair and collapsed into it. He stared ahead, seeing nothing. The other men were frozen in their places. A few minutes later, the insides of the complex began to screech as they had before. The screech did not rise in intensity, but gradually turned into a groan. The light slowly faded and then went out completely. "The power is out for good now," Jean wailed. "And we're prisoners on the asteroid. Now it's a runaway. We can't stop it."
"Why should we want to stop it? We'll take the Detaurus and leave to fight again another day. Pack up, get the men, and let's go."
Panicked, Jean fled from the room, feeling his way desperately through the darkness. Fear, unlike anything he had ever experienced or imagined, filled his entire being.